I should be writing number 206.
Wait. Wrong podcast. Hold on.
'Cause I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. I should be writing. I should be submitting my next draft. But I'm sitting home watching Doctor Who.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And I'm thinking, John, that we need a new intro, maybe something more dramatic.
I agree.
What about Batman?
Batman works.
We could go, hello and welcome to the Functional Nerds. My name is Batman.
I am John Anelio. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy and other nerdy things, including the I Should Be Writing theme song. This is not the I Should Be Writing podcast, but the interview we did this week is with Merle Lafferty, so we thought it appropriate. You can actually download the I Should Be Writing song from my Bandcamp site at johnanelio.bandcamp.com and lots of other things for free. Also for me this week, I have the Angry Robot Remix album available for absolutely free. It's got some really cool remixes by Dale Chase and David Ritter, and that was the song I co-wrote with author Matt Forbeck for the Angry Robot books. And check that remix album out. Really cool stuff. I really like it. So go, and that's totally free. So just go to my Bandcamp site and check that out. And
hey, John.
Yeah.
I'm probably not going to go and download I Should Be Writing from Bandcamp because I listen to it every single week.
You've probably heard it enough at this point, I imagine.
whenever I edit the episodes for Myr, I hear that, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here watching Doctor Who.
Yeah, and half the time you probably are watching Doctor Who, I bet. So. And hopefully, you know, once I get, you know, everything together, we'll have a johnanelio.com going. Patrick's going to help me out with that. I just need to sort of get my butt in gear and like sort of tell him what I want, and I just haven't had time to do that. So hopefully I won't have to say johnanelio.bandcamp.com anymore, and hopefully I could just say johnanelio.com. That would be nice. But
you can say it now. It just won't work.
Yeah, it just won't mean anything.
Right. I mean, it's no big deal there. Yeah, you say it all day and night. So, you know what? We're kind of flexing our podcast muscles because we've been gone for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You went to Balticon.
I did go to Balticon, yeah.
I've heard the rumors.
I don't know what sort of rumors you could have possibly heard. But
you and Merle Lafferty closed the bar every single night.
Well, I would say that would be one night, but Mur is our guest on, and we'll get to her interview in a few minutes. But I had a great time at Balticon, got to hang out with Mur in addition to the interview. Mur and JC Hutchins and I hung out, and Mike Cole and lots of other cool folks. And Balticon's a great con. If you live anywhere in the area, definitely go to that. Even if you don't, I think especially if you're a new media type of person.
I was going to say it's more of a media con.
I think so. I mean, there are some costumes and such, and there are some really just sort of straight ahead science fiction type panels. But
was there a slave Leia?
It was not a slave Leia, but there was. At least I did not see it, but there was a Wonder Woman,
new costume or old?
Old. Mm-hmm. She was blonde though.
What universe is Wonder Woman blonde?
Well, in the Balticon universe, apparently.
That's from Big Bang Theory. Come on.
Oh, sorry. I've never watched the show.
They got Penny to dress up as Wonder Woman to complete their Justice League of America group costume that they were trying to win at the comic book store. But she refused to put the black wig on. So she was a blonde Wonder Woman, and Sheldon had a fit.
All right, let's get this thing over with.
I'm sorry, but in what universe is Wonder Woman blonde?
Relax, no one's gonna be looking at her hair. I mean,
Well, maybe this woman was doing the same thing at the con. I have no idea. But Mike Cole, who is an author has a book coming out from Ace, and I interviewed him at Balticon as well, and that interview will air in a few weeks. Mike Cole and I got to hang out quite a bit. We were on a panel together and got to be pretty good friends with him. And, we both noticed the blonde Wonder Woman at the same time. And I took a nice picture of Mike with said blonde Wonder Woman.
Okay. Are you sure it was Wonder Woman? Maybe she was actually Artemis who stole Diana's outfit.
You know, when you're dealing with these conventions, that could have very well been what she was going for. But anyway, you know, it was a really good con. I had a really nice concert on Saturday night. I moderated the Rise of Geek Music panel, and I had Devo Spice on that panel, as well as Norm Sherman, and got to meet a bunch of Twitter friends, people that I know on Twitter. Really nice to meet everybody in person. So if you're listening to this, you know, really great to meet you folks. You know, and got to have a bunch of cool interviews on Sunday. Just really, you know, great con, really fun for me, got a lot done. Like I said, go to a con, people. Find your local science fiction con and go to it. It's totally worth it, especially nowadays with the way social media is. You sort of become friends with people all over the place. Go meet some of them in person. It's totally worth it. But
whoa. You want us to leave our basements?
You know, I think you should be brave and leave your basement.
You're weird.
I know, I'm totally weird. But anyway, so this interview that that Murr and I did, we talk quite a bit about her her Kickstarter campaign and how successful that was. You know, in the interview, Murr will tell you what a Kickstarter campaign is and how to use it. And
Before you go, and I'm sorry, John, for interrupting you. Before you go into that, I do need to apologize to all the listeners for perpetuating the stereotype of nerds living in their basements.
Yeah. Patrick owns his house, so there you go. And I own my townhouse, so we are working, hence the title Functional Nerds. We work, we actually own our homes, we're not living in our mom's basement, so there you go. But
That there's anything wrong with that.
Absolutely not. If you're living in your mom's basement, that's a totally valid life choice. Go for it, you know.
but get rid of the mullet.
Absolutely. I got rid of mine many years ago. So there you go. So anyway, Murr talks a lot about Kickstarter and her books. And it was really nice to just sort of sit down and Murr and talk about this stuff. So this is sort of podcast colliding. I'm sure a lot of people who listen to our podcast listen to Murr. So here it is.
And if we get any listeners from I Should Be Writing, if they're like coming over here listening to this right now, they're going, what the hell is this?
Why are these two guys babbling so much?
This is Murr's producer? No wonder we never hear him on I Should Be Writing. He's weird.
He's a weird dude. Anyway, so here you go. Here's the interview with Murr Lafferty.
All right, this is John, and I'm sitting with Murr Lafferty at Balticon. Murr Lafferty is an author and a podcaster who I think a lot of our listeners know who she is. Murr, say hi.
Hi.
One of the things I wanted to talk to Murr about today is her Kickstarter campaign, which was very successful. And so, Murr, why don't you first explain what Kickstarter is and what you decided to do with it for your project?
Okay, how bitter do you want me to go here?
You can go as bitter as you want.
Okay. Kickstarter, to start out, I'm not bitter about Kickstarter. Kickstarter is a crowdsourced funding site for creative people. I like to think of it as bringing back the old patronage system of an artist saying, I want to do something, but I don't have any money, and people saying, okay, well, here's some money to do it. It's really well designed. I'm just so impressed with how easy it is to do your project, because there's safety on the level of the donators, or the pledgers, I should call them, because you have, if you need 20 grand to do your project and you actually need all $20,000 and you make five, well, I'm out $5,000, but you can't do the project because you don't have your 20.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's extreme, like me giving $5,000 to a project, but still, it's that level of, you don't get the money unless you get all the money.
Mm-hmm.
And then to make it sweeter, you make incentives. Like, it's not just altruism. I mean, you make incentives for people to, you know, if you donate at a certain level, you will get this from me. And the incentives can be tangible, like books or CDs or DVDs, or they can be intangible, like, to a very extreme example is I fly you out here to view the filming of the movie,
mm-hmm.
something like that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a name. You get executive producer on the film. You get the book dedicated to you or something like that. And so here's where we get the bitter part. I have my most popular work is called the Afterlife series. It's a series of five novellas, Heaven, Hell, Earth, Wasteland, and War. And I started writing it in 2006 and podcasting it for free. By far the most popular thing I've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And two agents have tried to sell it and failed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a weird thing that I have thousands of people over here saying, when is this book going to be printed? Please, please print this book. And then publishing saying, no, we don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, I know that there's a lot of middle people that publishers thinking, okay, are the marketers going to go for this? Is editorial going to go for this? Are the booksellers going to go for this? Are the book buyers going to go for this? I mean, there's lots of people between the readers and the publishers, and I know they have to think about all that before they ever think about the people who actually have the money.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was actually when I started hearing about how well ebooks were doing, and my own ebook income was going up almost at an exponential rate. Still, it's like, you know, 10 to 100. I mean, not exponential. My math-loving husband's over there thinking, that's not what exponential means. But it's still...
Increasing.
It's increasing yeah. noticeably every yeah. month. And I thought, well, obviously I'm not going to sell these books, so I might as well put them out in ebook. But I wanted to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, I want to pay someone to really design it and get me a good cover and all that. So I contacted my friend Pablo Defendini, who I knew from Tor.com.
Mm-hmm.
He now works at Open Road Media. And I said, how much would you charge me for this? And he told me, and it was a number I could have covered. But then I thought, well, if I do a Kickstarter campaign, I don't have to foot the bill. And I could make incentives. I could actually... I didn't want to self-publish a hardcover that would either fill up my house or... I'm just not seeing Lulu books sell a lot. I don't know if it's the high price or the fact that you got to... Now they have PayPal, but before it's like it was another site you had to register for and give them your credit card and stuff like that. But I think now they have PayPal, so that's a little different. But still, it's... I just didn't want to self-publish a hard copy. But this is different. This would be doing a limited edition print run for people who pledged money. So I said... You know, if you pledge a certain amount, you'll get the hardcovers.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the only time I'm printing the hardcovers ever.
Yeah.
And my goal is really funny. Jim and I sat up the night before I launched it, and my husband's a mathematician and computer programmer, and said, okay, how do we figure out how much I need? Because it's not just the money that Pablo needed for the thing, because I have to take into account postage, I have to take into account incentives. I have to take into account that Kickstarter takes a 5% cut. It goes through Amazon Payments, which does a credit card fee.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just the flat rate of what I was going to pay Pablo.
Plus just the time, your time in terms of, you know, handling all the books. And with your incentives, I know there was a lot of things where you had some incentives where you would write people in. I think one of your bigger incentives was that you would write people in as a character into like a new book.
I renamed characters.
Okay, you renamed characters.
I renamed some minor characters.
Mm-hmm.
But there are on higher levels there were original short stories, and the highest level was I would write another novella in the series.
Right.
That went fast. That was surprising.
Right.
So I am now committed to writing a sixth book in the series.
Yeah. Well, I have a couple things that just based off what you just said that I want to ask I hate to steer you to the bitter part again, but it's so much fun. well, here's the thing, I'm not a writer, but I've gotten to know people in the publishing world a little bit through doing the podcast and doing my music, and it seems a little foolish that they're not seeing your personal success and not willing to take a chance on that, because it seems like... most authors don't sell well. Most published authors who are published by the major houses don't sell well.
Mm-hmm.
It's very few that actually do. And it seems like signing anybody is a risk. Now, if I put on my business hat and I'm not a publisher or an editor or anything else, I don't know why they wouldn't look at you and think, she has an audience. We don't have to do anything to at least... get, the first run kind of sold. Or, so maybe you're not going to be a New York Times bestseller, but I got to think from a business point of view, and obviously you're going to, I think it's, it's sort of put on the author anyway that, like, you're going to do your own promotion or you're going to do a lot of your own promotion. I think that's just part of it now.
Mm-hmm.
So it just seems odd that you already have this big fan base and this big group of people that if, name whatever publisher you want, put out one of your books, that you would at least sell it to your fan base. And let's face it, it's a lot easier. What a publisher does provide is that it gets your books into stores. And there's still people that are only going to buy books in stores.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even me, like, I don't think I've ever purchased a book on Amazon, ever. I just haven't. I would always buy a book in the store. Like, that's, and I'm, you know, someone who is a little more savvy than, you know, my mom or somebody. So the thing is that, so even if your fan base was out there talking about your books and mentioned your name and your name is on people's mind, and then they walk into a Barnes & Noble and sold, so I got, I don't know, so I don't mean to, like, be bitter, but I just think it's odd because it seems like I talk to a lot of different authors who are, you know, just signed and maybe their books aren't out yet, and, like, they don't have any fan base yet, or very little. They're trying to build it now. So, I mean, is it just that they think that these other folks, that their works are so good that it's just going to, you know... But I don't think that's... I mean, I think hopefully that's what you're shooting for, is that it's so good and word of mouth and all that kind of jazz. But I think... So, I'm sorry, all my publishing friends, but I think you're foolish for not publishing Murr. So, there you go.
I haven't read... Since dealing with the agents, I was not... privy to all the details mm-hmm. of why they did not want the books.
Okay.
But they have to love the book first. They can't just think, Murr's cool, whatever she writes will sell. They have to love the books. And they didn't. And, you know, when I did my agent hunt, I had some agents turn me down but say, you know, you're almost there. Mm. Send me your next book. Of course, the particular agent I'm talking about has since quit being an agent.
Right.
Which was just so funny. But, yeah, it's I got nothing. I think that the good thing about all this is I'm bitter to the point of all of my happy Pollyanna. Not even I'm going to hit it big, but the belief that if an agent is interested in me or if a publisher knows my name, it doesn't mean jack. And I feel so bad. I've got my podcast I Should Be Writing where I talk to all these people who are like I was 5 years ago. And they're like, oh my God, an agent wants the full manuscript. I'm like, that means jack. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to pee on their dreams.
Yeah.
Because it might work for them. I know people who've gone from like agent, from an agent reading their full to a book deal in like 6 weeks.
Right.
Because whatever they had was so hot, it just hit all the right notes. But, you know, for me, it's like, wow, okay, signing with the agent does not guarantee anything.
Yeah.
Having editors know your name. I've had... my last agent told me that there was an editor who I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Who said, this isn't right for us, but I would love to work with Murr, so please send me her next book.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't even know who that guy is. That's awesome.
Yeah. And let's not discount timing in all of this, too, because I think, you know, there is such a thing as right place, right time.
Yeah.
We on the podcast, we had Clay and Susan Griffith. They wrote they're writing the Vampire Empire books, and I read book one of them, and that's out through Pyre, and I loved it, and it's great. That was their interest, was sort of this steampunk and vampire thing, and they've been working on it for years.
Mm-hmm. Long time.
Long time. It wasn't like they were like, we're jumping on the vampire bandwagon, we're jumping on the, you know, they were working on this for a long time, and by the time they sort of had it finished, it was kind of like, they're great writers too. It's mm-hmm. really good, well written stuff. So when they were pitching that, it was like, yeah, we want this. So, you know, but if they pitched that maybe 5 years earlier, you know, didn't matter. Maybe wouldn't have mattered how good it was. It just, you know, I think there is something to be said about timing. And, you know, if you pitched it at a different time, maybe it'd be different. But I think the other part of it is, you know, I like what you said earlier about patronage. Because I think that's the way things used to be. I know from studying music history, you know, most of your, you know, your composers that people remember, you know, if you think of Bach or Mozart or somebody like that, they were, you know, a duke or whoever, you know, paid for them to, you know,
exactly.
Keep in mind, this was in the times when there were no radios or recorded music. If you wanted music, people had to play it. And if you wanted music for people to play, someone had to write it. So, you know, a composer was actually a job, but you worked for the duke or the king or whoever, and that's what you did. And it wasn't really until Beethoven where, you know, he started publishing music. Because then, before recorded music, you know, composers would write their music out, and then, you know, in your... you know, people would have their piano or what have you in their house, and like they're like, hey, let's play some music. Hey, Beethoven just it sounds really
Do
funny.
Do you have a new Beethoven? Wow!
But Beethoven was sort of the first sort of independent composer, because Beethoven was quite curmudgeonly and did not want to be, you know, beholden to the man, you know. So he was sort of the first. And then composers for a while did that. But I think, you know, Kickstarter is kind of interesting because I'd heard of Kickstarter quite a bit before you did your project. A lot of bands do it. Mm-hmm. They're like, we're doing our new album. And I've seen a lot of bands fail with it too. Because I think, I don't know if it's insecurity on my own part, but I always just kind of feel like with some of the Kickstarters, people do stuff like that before they're probably ready to mm-hmm. do it, before they have the fan base that can really support that. I think it's sometimes foolish if people are like, hey, people will give me money to do it. And I think you need to have sort of a fan base in place. And I remember when you announced it, I'm like, oh, that's cool. I bet Mer will be able to do that because she has a fan base. And then how fast it went and how sort of overwhelming was. So maybe you can tell people, I don't know if you want to share kind of the numbers, because I was really, because, you know, I'm broke, but I really wanted to, like, so I gave Mer a dollar. So
your name's in the book.
So my name's in the book. And I'm thinking, like, and I remember when I did it, you already had a couple $100. I think it was like on a Saturday. Maybe you announced it on a Friday night or some kind of weird time, I remember.
The whole thing was overwhelming. It's really funny. Well, like I was saying, Jim and I were trying to figure out how much I should go for. And we set it on $2,000. Mm-hmm. And the next morning, I was so excited. I launched it at like 8 o'clock on Saturday morning, mm-hmm. thinking, no one's going to pick this up till Monday.
Right.
And Jim came downstairs and he had that look on his face of like, I've been thinking. And he's like, yeah, $2,000's not the right number that you need. But I think if you get like, what was it, $3,300? Yeah, it was $3,300 was what I needed. Mm-hmm. And I reached $2,000 in, by the time I was driving to Kung Fu, so it was within 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, and somebody did buy, like I said, they went for the top tier, which was $1,000 that first day,
yeah.
which helped make that goal. And the first day I made about $5,000.
I remember, happened to be home most of the day, and I was just sort of checking, you know, I was just following Twitter and doing everything else, and then I remember checking back in, and I'm like, oh my God, like, it's up, like, that's amazing. Yeah. And I think it's because you have the fan base and the community that can support that. And I think, you know, we're getting to a point where I think that's, in some ways, it's kind of the way to go, you know, if you can do that, if you can build that. And how did you build that? You know, you've been doing your pot. Well, yeah. Maybe we could say how you built it.
Well, yeah, like I said, it's a established product that's been around since 2006, and you can still get it for free in audiobook. Mm-hmm. I had a friend who I think he's the one who initially pointed me to Kickstarter. No, one of my fans initially pointed me to Kickstarter, but the first creator I knew who'd used it and I had got first-person account of it was Daniel Solis, who does games. He's an independent game writer. And he's actually moving to our town, and we went out to dinner with him and his wife, and he's like, are you worried about the sophomore slump? I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like, I'm like his first project did so well. He's worried about a second project, mm-hmm. like that it won't do as well. Little aside, his second project just ended. He was going for $4,000 for a role-playing game, family-type role-playing game that mm-hmm. is awesome. I can't wait for this book mm-hmm. to come out. They almost hit $25,000.
Right.
It was insane. So he did not have a sophomore slump.
No.
Me, I expect one.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, this was a unique situation. I'm actually really interested to see what happens if I present an original project that is not based on anything I've done before. I'm interested to see what my community would they would react to that.
Right.
Which I'll be doing this fall, so I'm a little scared, but.
Yeah, well, it speaks to this idea of, I don't know if you've read The Long Tail or any of those books.
I'm familiar with the concept.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty well documented, well known. And the whole idea, you know, The Long Tail, and Chris Anderson wrote a book called Free, and there's mm-hmm. all this idea of sort of selling more to less, selling more things to less people, where it used to be, and I know this is in music quite a bit, where, you know, the whole thing for many years was a hit, have a big hit, sell it to millions of people. Well, now it's like, that still exists, but it's so few people that actually do that, because, you know, a lot of people who buy those hits aren't really buying them anymore, because it used to be where kids would buy music, would be the biggest, you know, buyers of music. Well, kids don't really buy music anymore, or not to the degree that they did. Maybe they go and spend 99 cents on the new Lady Gaga song, and that's about it. But it wasn't when, you know, when we were younger, you know, you'd have to go and buy an album. You'd have to go and spend $15 on an album, and you did that. And that was get as many people to buy that as possible. But now I think people are at a point where you find who your fans are. You build your audience. Most of the time, I think the best way to do that is by, you know, doing a blog, doing a podcast, giving a lot of your content away. So, because people have to learn, they have to become aware of you first, and then they have to decide if they like you second. People aren't just going to be like, come off the street. At least this is not, I look at all this stuff the way is, how do I interact with the world, and how do I buy things, and how do I become a fan of things? Mm-hmm. It's not like I walk around and come up with something on the internet and like, that's cool, I'm going to buy that right now.
Yeah.
No, it never works that way, at least for me. It's, that's interesting, I'll probably read five interviews with somebody or listen to a couple podcasts, and then it's like, all right, I'll subscribe to their blog, or I'll do, I mean, so a lot of times I think it takes months of sort of building a relationship with somebody, and then one day you're going to be like, yeah, I'm going to buy their album, or I'm going to buy their book, or I'm going to buy, because you feel connected. And I think it really just takes time. And you know, you're sort of a podcasting pioneer. You're one of the first people to do it. And I'm sure when you started doing this, or maybe I shouldn't put words in your mouth, but I don't know if the day you started a podcast, you were like, in 4 years. I'm going to build it. Yeah, how did starting the podcast, what were your, you know, thoughts when you started it? Were you podcasting in 2004? Okay.
I thought it would be a fun thing to do. Mm-hmm. I was writing geeky essays that I couldn't get published anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, if no one wants to publish them, I can publish them. The idea of releasing my fiction then was just verboten, anathema, find out whatever word you want that means, God, no, I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. I was terrified that it would take away, it would be considered publishing. I was terrified. I wasn't terrified it would be stolen. I was scared that publishers would view it as already published and therefore not desirable. Mm-hmm. So, but for my essays, no one wanted them anyway.
Right, right.
And so I started reading my essays on a sort of audio blog. And that, I don't know if, I mean, it was also because it was one of the first ones out there. I think when I started, there were fewer than 1,000 podcasts. Mm. You know, NPR hadn't gotten on board. iTunes hadn't gotten on board.
Right, right.
Ricky Gervais was not there. Kevin Smith was not there. So people have asked me and J.C. Hutchins and Scott Sigler, and probably other people, but I know for a fact they've asked us, how can I build what you built? And I think what you never want to hear is time. Mm-hmm. The second thing you never want to hear is hard work. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, I've heard, and this is not very complimentary to me and some of my friends, but that the people who are the most popular independent podcast novelists are only there because they got there first. And yes, there were fewer choices. But it's not just that. It's hard work. It's continuing to create content. Sorry. I thought I'd turn that down. So, sorry, Patrick. people were saying that we got where we were just because we got there first. And it didn't have to do with skill or anything. But it has to do with when it happened, yes. But also the hard work involved in continually putting out content. And if the content sucks, no one's going to listen to it. Mm. So there's got to be some sort of, it's got to be at least a little bit good.
Right.
Because now you don't have to listen to us. You've got tons of choices. It's not just, oh, well, there's no more free audio except for what Mer just put out. I guess I'll download that. It's no, you don't have to download my stuff.
Yeah.
So it really is. It's time. It's hard work. It's continually putting out content. It's not. I think the only person who's ever done The only person who has not followed this model is Nathan Lowell, and he is an enigma.
Mm-hmm.
He is an outlier. I don't know how Nate did what he did, but he like didn't. He continually puts out product, but he didn't market. He doesn't talk himself up very much. He's just he just puts out product, and he is incredibly popular. I think his newest book is number one on science fiction today.
Okay.
On Kindle, actually, I don't know if it was Kindle or hardcover, but he did tweet about that this morning.
Yeah.
So, but and when he came on, there's just something about the way Nate writes that just people really, really love. And so he was. I'm not saying he's. I'm just saying when he got on, he just became very popular.
Yeah.
It was really interesting.
Well, I think you know. I was talking about this, and we interviewed Peter Aurelian a few weeks ago, and. We were talking about...
Peter's so nice.
He is. He's really nice.
Sorry.
And Peter's a good example of someone who's out there working his ass off
yeah.
to make awareness of it. Because I've noticed, like, because he contacted me months ago about wanting to be on the podcast, and he and I ended up getting along real well. We have a lot in common with music. And but anyway, I noticed, like, on about the time that our podcast came out, he was on yours, and he was on SF Signal, and he was, like, interviewed. Like, he went out, and I know he did, because he did that. He contacted me, and, like, so he's someone who believed in what he's doing. And he wrote a great book, and he's working on his next one. So all that, there's a ton of hard work. But one of the things we were talking to him about, and this is sort of an idea that I have all the time, is that ideas are overrated. And what I mean by that is I think lots of people can have ideas for writing a book or doing a podcast or whatever the case may be. You're not a genius for coming up with an idea. It is the execution of that idea that makes a difference, that makes it successful in whatever way that it is. And I think what you're kind of saying is it's not just executing it, it's continually executing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's every... you know, week, every day, whatever, you know, whatever you're working on, whether you're writing a novel and just plugging away at it every day. Because I think a lot of people, you know, they get ideas for doing a blog or they get ideas for doing a podcast. And I encourage that I think everybody should have a blog and I think everybody should have a podcast. And I think, you know, even if two people listen to it, do it. If you have the desire to do it. But I think a lot of people get real excited about doing it and then they do it for a couple weeks or a couple months or however long. I mean, and it's the whole pod fading thing where it's like people do a podcast and then they stop doing a podcast.
There's no payoff.
Yeah.
They don't see any payoff and they want to.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the reason why you and JC and everybody else who has been successful is that you just kept at it. You kept doing it. And then, so yeah, I always hate that, like, well, you were first. It's kind of the same thing with Jonathan Colton. A lot of people sort of bemoan his success sometimes where they're just like, well, it was a gimmick and he was the first to do it. And it's like, yeah, but he's really good. And he does it all the time and he's still putting out good stuff. And, you know, I hate it because, you know, let's face it, as creative types, you know, it's very easy to be jealous of somebody else's success, you know?
Oh, I got a big Felicia Day problem. I love her work, but I'm so jealous of her. It's painful.
Yeah.
Hurts me right here.
Well, and then, you know, and it's funny that you brought her up because I was thinking about this a while ago in that, you know, and sort of what you're doing with the Kickstarter thing has made me rethink what I've been doing because there was a couple months ago I decided like, all right, I'm going to really try to like sort of break into that next level of people, you know, I'm going to really try to get my stuff out there to like, you know, that the people that have that have much more notoriety than I do. And I remember... you know, trying to kind of like interact with those folks like, you know, Paul and Storm and all those guys. And it, you know, I did to a certain extent, but I know for me, I kind of stopped doing that a little bit. I still follow those people and I still like kind of keep to because I find them interesting. But I decided like you can't, by doing that, and I was kind of sort of consciously doing it for a month or so. And I didn't like the way it felt, first of all. I felt like, those are the cool kids, and I so want to be with the cool kids. I want to be the one. So that felt weird after a while. I didn't like myself for feeling that
no,
way.
No, I completely, completely identify. Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't like that. That felt weird. And I also felt like, well, me just sort of trying to, like, put myself with them is not the way to be put with them. You know, it's like, if they discover my stuff sort of naturally, organically, that's the way. And you know what? I have very little control over that. So, But the idea that I had is like, I already have a pretty, you know, I have a little bit of a community that I'm a part of through the podcast and through my music and what have you. And like, I'd rather spend my time, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, hanging out with those people, you know, just, you know, my time is better spent working on my music, putting out new stuff, and hanging out with the people that I already like what I'm doing, because, you know, because A, that just feels better and that feels more natural, but B, it's sort of like then the community sort of lifts itself up. So, you know, because everybody else that I, you know, kind of hang out with, you know, they got their own things going on, whether they do their writer or a blogger or what have you. So, you know, everybody sort of lifts the awareness of everybody else a little bit. So that, but it's funny because I noticed that there's sort of like levels of popularity. You have like your Will Wheaton and you have your Felicia Day, and then mm-hmm. you have, you know, you sort of, you know, however many followers you have or what have you. And it's like, I've noticed when I was like really paying attention to that, I noticed how much I think everybody does it to a certain extent. It's like, somebody can look at you, for instance, and I'm sure you have some people that are like, I wish I had as many followers as Murray. And then, you know, and I'm just using, so I don't know if it's, but then someone who has, say, you know, a 50,000 person audience, I notice people that have in that 5 to 10 range are like, I wish I had 50,000 people who, you know, did what I did. So I think, you know, we tend to do that.
Well, we always do that. I remember I read something about Felicia Day saying, like, she was annoyed. Well, it was amusingly annoyed because she went into an audition and the directors had never heard of her. The people working the front desk are like, holy shit, it's Felicia Day, who does the guild.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, all the little people are like, ee! And the people who have the power to hire her, never heard of her.
Yeah, yeah.
I think she said this a while ago. She's probably bigger than that now. But, yeah, I mean, everybody's... And, you know, if we ever stop doing that, we stop being hungry and we stop fighting.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It doesn't... The jealousy is a good thing as long as you make it spur your work and not make you sit there like a jealous husk.
Yes.
Feeling bad about yourself.
Exactly. Well, I know you have to get going.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
I'll talk to you more.
Oh, that's okay. Well, we can do it another time. But that's good. So, Mar, thank you for joining us. Do you want to throw out your, you know, your website and, you know, your Twitter and all that kind of jazz?
Yeah, Murverse.com is where everything is. I'm Mighty Mur on Twitter. And the Heaven, the ebook is out. And I'm not sure when you guys are putting this up, but Hell, the ebook will be out, which is book 2 in the Afterlife series, will be out beginning of June.
Okay.
So that's sometime this week.
Sounds good. All right, Mar, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, Patrick.
And we're back. Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mur. Coming up on the podcast next week, we should have Ken Denmead, who is the author of the Geek Dad books, as well as the editor-in-chief over at WiredGeekDad.com. He is my lord and master over at Wired. So we're really looking forward to having him on the podcast. Following that, we will have run the rest of the Balticon interviews that I did. So really some great interviews in there, so I'm really looking forward to everyone getting an opportunity to hear those. Once again, you can download my new Angry Robot Remix album over at bandcamp.com and follow me at twitter.com/JohnAnilio. Patrick, what do you have going on?
Oh, all kinds of things. Well, you were off at Balticon schmoozing with Mur and drinking gin.
I was drinking scotch and on Friday night and beer on Saturday night, just to, you know.
Well, I know that gin is one of Mur's favorites, so she likes to like the gin and tonic and all that.
I had to order. I bought a round of drinks, and I bought Mur and JC. They wanted dirty martinis, and I had to go back like 4 times because then the guy was like, "Do you want it up or on?" And I'm like, "I don't know what any of this means." And I had to go back and keep asking them what they wanted. It took like 10 minutes to get those drinks ordered. Anyway,
oh, that's why you got to have like Andy Romine with you. You know, I had to go for a work thing. I had to go and buy. We were doing we sponsored a golf hole, you know, like you sponsor the hole and then when people come by, they see your sign and you're standing there doing stuff. And so, they were having alcohol for the realtors and they wanted me to go and get stuff to make Bloody Marys. And I said, well, what does that take? Cause I'm not a drinker. I'm like, you know, what do you need to make Bloody Marys? And they said, oh, vodka and tomato juice. So I go to the liquor store and the guy's like, that's not a Bloody Mary. You need Tabasco, you need salt, you need pepper, you need blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, he says, here, take this mix. And I'm like, oh, okay, good. But that's why you need Andy Romine with you. And speaking of Andy, you know, he's got a gin and tonic post up on functionalnerds.com that is very popular. He's already got like 9 comments on it, which is huge for one of our posts. We usually don't get people commenting because they talk to us directly on Twitter, which is like the new thing. I don't know if you've noticed that with blogs.
Yeah. Well, you know what I noticed about that post that Andy put out is like 50 or 60 people already liked it on Facebook. So that's quite a lot for us too. So Andy's probably our most popular writer thus far. Although, you know, I think Sandra Wickham does a lot of
I mean, they all do. You know, John Remy, Paul Weimer, Kathy Russell, Mike Fergaga.
I'm sure he won't mind you like butchering his name like
Fergetti?
That.
Fergetti.
Yeah.
Mike, you need to tell me how to pronounce your name, dude. Yeah. But no, I mean, they're all great. It's just Andy's post right now is like on the top of mind awareness, and people are going there. It's gin and tonic, and you know, it's the perfect summer drink according to him, and he gives a lot of history on it. It's a great post.
Yeah.
So people should go check that out. By the time this episode airs, which is number 60, which is a huge deal for us.
Yeah, sure.
Paul Weimer should have a new review up.
Mm.
So that'll be up there. I'm also working with Jen, who's been, I think she wasn't, didn't we have Jen on the podcast at one point? She's the, Oh No You Didn't.
I believe she was on, maybe she was on ours or she was on a round table. Did we do a round table at one point or was that an SF Signal one?
I don't remember, but I know Jen, she's been on before. And she sent me a video game review that I'm going to put up.
Awesome.
On LA Noir. So I'm going to go ahead and put that up. When you were at Balticon, I stayed home and I wrote 21,000 words.
Wow.
In the novel. So yeah, that was like a huge boost. So that's what I did while you were off playing. cool. You weren't playing totally. I mean, you were getting a lot of interviews and stuff, but
I was having fun though. I was having fun.
This week on SF Signal, people should go check out the panel because we have a surprise special guest who shows up. It's the following week. So next week on SF Signal, we'll have a surprise guest. I'm not going to say any more about that because it's a surprise. And we're working on another surprise on SF Signal that actually involves Mer Lafferty and the Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing podcast.
Very interesting.
So another little surprise-y kind of thing going on there. So you're going to have to listen to SF Signal's podcast to find out what that's all about. Let's see. Anything else? Not off the top of my head. Twitter.com/ATFMB, ATFMB.com, Shadowbytes.com. Good stuff. Webcomic there. Kind of funny. Facebook.com/ATFMB. I'm all over the place.
Yes.
I am all over the place.
Very good. Very good. All right, everyone. Well, we will see you next week where our guest will be Ken Denmead. All right. Have a good week, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, Patrick.